So, Hare Krishna, welcome to this session 4 on the homemaking, Bhakti Womanhood and Homemaking series. So, in this session and the next session, we're going to discuss about motherhood, a very, very important function, very, very important function of a woman's life, of her one of her very important roles in society. So, last week we talked a lot about how there are different varna occupations for women and how in the past culture the woman's work and her home were pretty close to each other. And so everything worked out well for them. It was not that they had to go outside to work. Everything was within the same region and the work was also not technically taxing in that sense. It was more, to deal with the elements, to deal with people and things like that. And then because of the Industrial Revolution and because of the Second World War and things like that, a lot of the whole spectrum of a man's work and a woman's work, everything changed. And we saw how, both men and women had to leave home and go to work and how that became an extremely, taxing thing for the women because they also had to come back home and take care of their household responsibilities. And then we also discussed about how, bhakti is about yukta vairagya. And it's important to engage our natures in the best possible way so that we can make progress in bhakti. And so one of the very important considerations we discussed was if, we understand that homemaking is a very important function and staying at home and being a mother is a very, very important function. But we also have our own conditioning and also, the household work, sometimes we don't find it challenging enough and sometimes it's not appreciated that much in society. So what we discussed is that while it's desirable for women to be at home and take care of the house, but it's also important for them to consider their own natures because if they're extremely disturbed by being at home, then they will not be able to follow bhakti themselves or help their families follow bhakti. Because we have certain definitions of success that are tied to the mode of passion, which is being result-oriented, task-oriented, having deadlines, having projects and things like that. And sometimes that is not satisfied at home. So women, and also people don't appreciate women who are at home these days. So, it's the whole society is geared in a certain way. And sometimes in order to get social acceptance or, feel our sense of worth, a lot of women, go to work. Or sometimes it's also financial necessity. So we also discussed about how there are different things that need to be considered. Some people will go to work because of their time, place, and circumstances. Some people may go for sense of worth, sense of challenges, and things like that. So understand your nature and do what is needed, but so that it is conducive to bhakti. Now, we don't go and do those things so that we can have a higher standard of living and enjoyment, but we do it just because if we don't do it, our minds may be so disturbed that we may not be able to practice bhakti. And then gradually, as we follow the process of bhakti, we get purified of these lower material natures coming from the modes of passion and ignorance. We get more and more situated in goodness. And then our definitions of success change from achievement and remuneration and promotions and self-worth to how best can I perform the duties, the prescribed duties that have been given to me by Krishna and serve Krishna and help my family make advancement towards Krishna. And also sometimes, women may quit their jobs and be at home. And Krishna consciousness is a wonderful place to also, get your sense of challenge and, also satisfied. So you can dovetail that propensity also in services or in things that are related to Krishna consciousness. Like we see in the Sammamish, ISKCON Seattle Sammamish Temple under the guidance of Hari Vilas Prabhu, where he has provided so many opportunities for women to, use their talents and find their point of connection in Krishna through their talents, like that. So we have a wonderful community here, and Hari Vilas Prabhu has very nicely created this space for all of us. Having said all of that, let's start looking from today at some of the very important, one very important role of women in society, which is that of being a mother. Now, some of us on the call may not be mothers, or some of us may never be mothers, or some of us may yet to be mothers, or some of us may be mothers with, you know, years and years of experience. So this call is for all women because we all have been blessed with a certain feminine nature and certain type of body and emotions which can enable us to be mothers even if we are not biological mothers. And this motherhood function of either being a biological mother or a mother in society to other children or to other adults, you know, if we're caring for somebody, we're being mothers to them in one sense, is a very, very important function that is needed. And, you know, something for us to discuss, something that we've not been trained to do. And without further delay, we'll get into the topic. So this is one of the functions that we have at Bhakti Women, is to support motherhood and to, you know, to help women understand the greatness of their contribution to society. You know, a lot of times we're not appreciated. Oh, what do you do at home? Oh, you just take care of your children? There's daycare. You can send your kids to daycare. Or what do? You know, you don't get that kind of appreciation. So we want to help women understand the greatness of their contribution to society and feel that sense of appreciation. Because as we discussed in the last conference, last call, was one important thing is to be with like-minded people. So sometimes, you know, if we are, you know, dealing with the outside world, it can be very difficult to stick to our guns and stick to our values. So it's important we find people who have similar values as us and we stick with them so that we feel encouraged, appreciated, accepted in that circle of friends. And we feel the strength to continue our values even if the world is going in a different direction. So we want to help women increase the adoption of timeless principles through examples and education, and help women get in touch with themselves and their spirituality and provide training sessions as and when possible. So we have a lot of plans in place, but we need a lot of hands. So please connect with us either through this chat or through Facebook or email. If you're on this live online class right now, you probably have some way to contact us. You have an email or a Facebook message or an event. Just contact us through either of those, any of those things, and we will love to get in touch with you to, you know, share the work that we're doing and also take it forward. So let's look at what Shastra has to say about becoming a parent. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 18th chapter, Lord Rishabhadev, and this is not the Lord Rishabhadev who, you know, the Jain people worship, that is different Rishabhadev. This is Lord Rishabhadev, who is a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Vishnu himself. And when he is leaving the kingdom and entrusting it to his sons, and he is going to the forest and leaving all the material engagements so that he can, you know, focus on his, you know, bhakti towards the end of his life, he's training his sons on how to rule the kingdom. And one of the messages he gives to them is Gurur na sasyat, swajano na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat, daivam na tatsyan, na patischa sasyan, na mocha yedya samupayate mrityum. So he says, one who cannot deliver his dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. Why? Because you're cheating your dependents. Your dependents have come to you and they're trusting you with their welfare. And if you're not engaging them and not taking them or not giving them the ultimate welfare, taking care of their ultimate welfare, which is to reconnect with Lord Sri Krishna, then you should not become a parent or a guru or a mother, father, husband, even a husband or a demigod or a spiritual master, because then it would amount to cheating. So what does Srila Prabhupada have to say about, you know, this? Let's look at like about 3 or 4 slides. How Prabhupada is, you know, explaining this to us. He's training, giving us this training which we've never received. You know, what is the role of a father or a mother in the life of a child? You know, our understanding of that is based on what our experiences have been. But nobody has trained us. Nobody trained our parents. That training was not there. And neither did we seek out to understand the responsibilities of our role. But here Srila Prabhupada, the founder of the INSCON, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is very compassionately explaining to us. And he's saying that in different places. Like here he's explaining this particular thing in one of the Bhagavatam cantos, the 6th canto. And he says, a parent who does not know how to save his son has no values because such fathers and mothers may be had in any form of life, even among the cats, dogs, and so on. So even the cats and dogs, you know, they help their, you know, take care of the bodies of their children. They help the children learn how to find food, and you know, help the children learn how to protect themselves and take care of themselves. So by us trying to, you know, physically nourish them and taking them for sports and, you know, all the classes that we, or, you know, saving for their college education, you know, like for 18 years of their life, you know, we spend our lives outside of home, outside of taking care of them, in sponsoring their childhood, you know, their college education, or in doing so many other things. You know, it's similar to what cats and dogs do for their children. But we as human beings have been blessed with a higher intelligence, and we understand that the purpose of life, the purpose of this material body, the human form is very rarely achieved, and the purpose of this body is to help deliver our children. You know, these souls have been entrusted to us, and our purpose is to help deliver them back home, back to Godhead. And then Srila Prabhupada says in another lecture, you know, the theme is consistent, if you see. So this is from February 6, 1975, from a lecture in Hawaii. And he says, a man should not desire to become a father, and the woman should not desire to become a mother, unless both of them have taken the vow that I shall beget a child and stop his cycle of birth and death. This is the duty of the parent, not that I shall beget children like cats and dogs. So see the consistency of the message over time, which Srila Prabhupada has to say. And then he's again saying that something similar in a lecture in Manila on October 12, 1972. And he says, the father and mother's duty is to the children that this child has come to me in my womb. This is the last. He will have no more to come back to the womb of a mother. I will teach him in such a way that he will be liberated. That is the duty of the father and the mother. And again, he says in a lecture, November 20th, 1971, in Delhi, it is the duty of the father and the mother to stop the repetition of birth and death of his son. The mother should consider that my son came to my womb, and he has suffered so much while he was remaining within the womb. Now I shall teach my son or daughter in such a way that he no more is going in the womb of a material mother. Because birth, death, old age, and disease are like very bad sufferings, and we don't, and they're all, the life that we live is all disconnected from Krishna. But we need to go back from this jail-like life back to our eternal life with Lord Shri Krishna, and we want our children to be able to do that. So a mother's role and a father's role is extremely important, but because we're talking about motherhood, we'll be talking more about the importance of that. That does not mean that raising the child is entirely the mother's responsibility and the father has nothing to do with it. No, we're not promoting that. But since the topic motherhood itself is so vast, we're trying to focus on our time on that right now. And equally important is the father's role, and we will try to cover that as and when we have the opportunity in this seminar or in another seminar. So we have this nice, you know, as we said, we've been researching different books, different cultures, different times, history, you know, to get an understanding of different topics as we were presenting last time also. So there's this nice book that we have, The American Woman's Christian Home, Christ-Centered Home. And in that, there's a chapter on the care of infants and the care of children. And the lady who wrote this book, Catherine Beecher, used to run a women's ministry and a girls' training school. And she's quoting another intellectual educator, Herbert Spencer. And she says, if a merchant should commence business without any knowledge of arithmetic or bookkeeping, we should exclaim at his folly and look for disastrous consequences. Or if, without studying anatomy, a man set up as a surgeon, we should wonder at his audacity and pity his patience. But that parents should commence the difficult work of rearing children without giving any attention to the principles, physical, moral, or intellectual, which ought to guide them, excites neither surprise at the actors nor pity for the victim. So we've all received training on how to calculate, how to make money, how to take care of the house, how to go use the, use different tools, gadgets. You know, we've received some kind of material education which deals with, you know, dealing with material elements. But none of us were prepared for a role as women. None of us were prepared for a role as mothers. And we're just trying to learn from some experiences of different people. And even they were not, you know, they didn't know much. They did their best. They gave their best to us, but even they didn't know much about their role, about the goal of their life. And in a lot of cases, it has been, you know, parents have said, okay, I did a good job at eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So here you go. This is how you do a good job at eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And then we keep transmitting that in the future. But that's not what our role is. So let's try to, you know, it's a very big topic. This should be a seminar in itself. But we just focus this session and the next session on this particular field. A little bit, just an introduction. So we have to understand, based on all of these things that we have heard, that motherhood is a spiritual practice. And it's a special service to help the soul in its journey back to Godhead. So all of us have taken birth, but these children are not our children. They are Krishna's children who have been given to us to so that we can facilitate their journey in going back home, back to Godhead. You know, so we have to give them the proper physical care, emotional care, spiritual care, guidance, and our own example so that they can make success in life. And success in life is not becoming a CEO of a big company or, you know, earning, being a millionaire or being the president of the United States of America. True success is at the end of this life, who is confident that that person is going to go back home to act to Godhead? And are we confident that we have given the right atmosphere, the right training for our children to be able to do that? And a lot of times when you put the spiritual in focus, the material things automatically fall in focus because you overcome a lot of issues in personality. So we're not saying don't focus on the academic success and the, you know, physical success of your children. No. All the training that we give in that is important for, you know, different qualities that they learn. But everything has to be done with a spiritual focus. And we will see through some examples and some things how that can be done. So a woman's role was considered so important that she was like the first spiritual guide, the guru for the child. That therefore in Vedic culture, a woman was offered all kinds of protection. So protection did not mean that her rights were curbed or that she was being mistreated in the name of protection like it happens right now. Protection meant that people recognized the contribution, Vedic culture recognized her contribution to the elevation of Brahminical culture in society. So in Vedic culture, protection was offered to these five entities, the cows and the Brahmanas. So the Brahmanas, because they were the torchbearers, the leading lights, the guiding lights, you know, to guide the society towards a loving relationship with Krishna. And the cows, cow protection included bulls also. And the cow bull protection was done because they helped in the advancement of Brahminical culture. So the cows, because of the milk that they gave, and also serving the cows is very dear to Krishna and helps people come to the mode of goodness. So the milk that the cows give, the good milk, and something that Madhavchandra Prabhu is, you know, providing a service to the entire society by having, you know, cows in his farm, and he's providing that kind of milk. So that kind of milk that is coming from cows that have been loved and worshipped properly helps in development of the finer brain tissues that help in understanding higher spiritual knowledge and keeping the mind calm. And that, and also the bull is our father, because the bull would help in tilling the land, plowing the land, and in, you know, so from there we would get our food. And those foods in the mode of goodness, those grains and fruits and vegetables, very important so that we could have proper food in the mode of goodness. So we always worship the cows and the bulls like that. And they were always protected, and so were the Brahmanas. So they were provided for. Brahmana did not have to worry about their maintenance. And the older people were protected because they were at the fag end of their life. And so that they did not have to worry about their, you know, how they would maintain themselves or their health. So that they were protected nicely and taken care of nicely by the younger generation so that they could focus on the lotus feet of Krishna and complete their journey back home, back to Godhead. So that they did not have to worry about certain things in life and they could fully focus on their spiritual life. And children, because they were the next generation and because they had a right to be protected and their lives nurtured so that they could achieve the purpose in their life of going back home, back to Godhead. And women, because women took care of the children and women did all of these duties at home that we're talking about that would be helpful for the entire family's growth back home, back to Godhead. So protection meant taking care of the woman's needs, emotional, physical, and spiritual, giving her a proper environment in which she could grow nicely. because the entire 100% of the next generation was dependent upon how the women cared for their children, and also care for the brahmanas, feeding of the brahmanas, charity, and also care for older people, cows. Also, a lot of these things were done by women. So, or spearheaded by women, or guided by women, or facilitated by women. So it was very important, so that the entire society could move further properly. A woman was protected. So that was the amount of recognition that was given to a woman's role. And all the men, another protection was in the physical sense. All the men were trained to see women as a mother and not as an object of attraction. So she was not a sexual object for pleasure, but she was an object for respect. And that has also changed right now. And that leads to a lot of problems in the future generation. If the woman is not treated properly, seen properly, then her job as a woman, as a mother, is not being respected. And then the amount of energy she can give to the child, it also reduces because she's disturbed. So through her genuine love, so if a woman was protected, taken care of physically, emotionally, spiritually, given proper environment in which she could grow, then she didn't have to worry about so many things. And then through her genuine love, a mother could make a sincere attempt in helping her child go back home, back to Godhead. So one thing was emotionally genuine mother love, motherly love, and then genuine motherly love even in nurturing the physical body of the child, taking care of the health, and also in spiritually teaching the child how to please Krishna. So the spiritual focus was also guided by the child. So the father would provide the overall direction for the family, but the woman would be the one who would be in the details with her children and teach them each and everything. And I'm personally very grateful that my mother was always at home for me and my brother. Even if she was at the neighbor's house, she would make it a point to be there at home before we would come back from school. And at that time, I didn't understand the value. But now I understand the immense value of what it was to have her at home, to take care of, you know, to have someone to share with about how my school was, and to have someone to share with, you know, how I was feeling in the day, to have someone to tell me to eat, give me something to eat, to genuinely hold my hand, you know, help me freshen up, and, you know, even now. And I feel that that went a long way in, you know, shaping me into the person I am. And I'm very, very grateful to her for all the sacrifices she did to do that. So it was not that a lot of our mothers were not educated in that sense of, I mean, of course, she was an educated woman. She had her degree, but she was not educated in the sense of how to take care of children and things like that. Like we're having a training program right now. But her genuine motherly love is what, and her nurturing, I'm sincerely grateful for that. Because I can see how she gave me all of these three things that I see here and how she's still giving me. So a little bit of an understanding here. When we talk about physical, emotional, and spiritual, let's look at that from the, you know, the scriptural or the Shastric point of view, you know, of what the Vedic civilization has to say about it. So there are these five sheets that cover the soul, and they're called as Anamaya Kosha. Anamaya Kosha is basically the stage of consciousness in which, you know, the goal is to eat sumptuously. That's like when children, you know, they're small. And even now we have, you know, this need to eat properly and all. So we still have that kosha. But in children, that's the only thing they understand, right? And Anamaya Kosha is also, you know, the, feeling a little bit like, you know, basic needs of protection and things like that. So Anamaya and Pranamaya. So Pranamaya is like the life air. So basically, you know, they can understand their life safe and protected. Our thoughts are focused on work, family, friends, politics, entertainment, and so on. And that's also like, you know, the relational layer or the sheath. So that's where children, you know, Anamaya and a little bit of Pranamaya, where they understand, you know, the emotions and the affection and the physical touch and the physical care, and then how that brings about changes in their brain and things like that. And that is something we all have, but our children, at a child's level, is the Anamaya that is only developed very fully, and a little bit of Pranamaya. And depending upon how the Anamaya and Pranamaya are taken care of, that is their food and, you know, basic needs of food and love, that's how then their other stages of Manamaya, Vijnanamaya, and Anandamaya develop. So then you have this Manomaya stage, or the mind and the mental peculation. So basically you have thoughtfulness above concerning pressing matters of life. So apart from taking care of your physical basic needs and, you know, all the relationships and emotions and, you know, how do I make my money and how do I feed, bring food on the table and things like that, there are other thoughtfulness that can be there. But if somebody's anamaya and pranamaya is not properly catered to and taken care of, then it's very because that becomes disturbed, it becomes very difficult to develop manomaya or this vijnanamaya, where they understand I'm something different from this body. And then finally, Anandamaya, which is the goal of our life, to know we are spirit soul servant of Krishna. You know, so it's very important that these physical needs and emotional needs are that we have to really invest properly in our children, so that they can develop a proper spiritual conception. So we don't invest in their physical and emotional needs just because for the sake of it. No, the whole focus has to be how do we take care of their spiritual lives. So we take care of their physical emotional needs also with that focus. So now we will see a woman in action who in one interaction with her child she was able to take care of like you know address all of these things in just one interaction, one very difficult interaction that her child was facing, and how she took care of him. And then we'll see the benefits of something like that. And we will also try to see where, you know, how we respond to those situations as mothers, and you know, which of these are we taking care of. So mothering is taking care of all these five aspects at all times with the spiritual focus. But many times we end up just focusing on the Annamaya and Pranamaya all our lives and all our children's lives, and we are not able to focus on the other things. So let's learn. That's why we have this course where we can share and we can learn. So we'll talk about Suniti, Dhruv Maharaj's mother, and how she cared for the whole person, body, mind, and soul for her child. So Suniti also had a step, like she had a step wife, or like this, her husband had two wives. That was Suniti, and the younger one was Suruchi. But the king Uttanapada liked Suruchi more. And one time, Suruchi's son, Uttama, I think, was sitting on the Uttanapada's lap, and Suniti's son, Dhruv Maharaj, seeing his brother on his father's lap, also wanted to get onto his father's lap. So while he was trying to get onto his father's lap, Suruchi, the stepwife, came over there and said, "Hey, how dare you sit on his lap? You know, for that privilege, you have to take birth from my womb." Because she knew she was the favored queen, and she knew Dhruv Maharaj's mother, Suniti, was not the favored queen. Now, how would we handle that? If our child deserved something and did not get it, and our child was very upset. So Dhruv Maharaj was very upset. And he was not so upset by what his stepmother said, but he was extremely upset by, you know, his father not giving any reaction, you know, not protecting him in that situation. So he got really upset and he ran to his mother. He was a 5-year-old boy, right? And the father also didn't pay heed to the child's request. Now Suniti already heard about this, you know, traveled through the palace, and before her son came, even she was extremely disturbed because she knew she was not the favored queen. And she felt very bad for her son, that her son had to go through that, right? So what did Suniti do? So Suniti first placed Dhruv Maharaj on her lap, and she empathized with him and reflected his feelings. You know, I understand this is very difficult for you. And there are shlokas in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, which you can read, where she's going through this dialogue over just 10 shlokas, and she says all of these things. What an intelligent mother. So when she's placing him on her lap and she's empathizing and reflecting his feelings, she is, you know, taking care of the basic needs, right? The physical needs, like that. And the empathy is a little bit anamaya, a little bit pranamaya. And she tells him, "Do not wish evil upon others. Give up your envy." So basically she's telling, okay, your stepmother said this, your father did not take action, but you don't wish evil upon others. But usually what happens is we start guiding before we take care and empathize with them and pacify them. So she first does that. So that second thing that she does is like pranamaya. Basically, how are you connected with people around you and how are you going to relate with them, right? And then the third step she says is, you know, now it's beyond the pressing concerns of life, pressing matters of life. So she tells her, whatever my co-wife said, whatever Suruchi said, actually is factual. She told you, you have to first take birth in my womb and then you can sit in your father's lap. And for you to be able to take birth in my womb, you have to worship Lord Narayana. So Suruchi is telling, yes, she is right. If you want anything in life, you have to worship Lord Narayana. So once she had taken care of the Anamaya and Pranamaya, then you're able to think properly, right? So she's helping her son think properly. And she's telling, yes, that's a pressing concern in life that your father didn't respond, you didn't get to sit on the lab, mother insults, stepmother insulted and all that. But you know, hey, she has a point. And then she says, yeah, you want that? You should worship the Lord to get out of the cycle of birth and death. So the cycle of birth and death is basically she's establishing to him, you're not this body, but your spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. So now what should you do? You should engage in the Lord's service. So then she's establishing, taking him to the Anandamaya stage, you know. So in one particular dialogue, she pacifies him, takes care of his physical needs, you know, because she understands his soul is in this body and is having an emotional experience right now. Let me pacify. And she, but by following this way of taking care of the whole person, she guides him so nicely that Dhruv Maharaj actually becomes extremely successful. Now, Sunithi could have taken Dhruv Maharaj's hand and gone to the king's palace. And she could have gone and said, hey, king, you know, I know you're treating me badly, but how dare you treat my son badly? How could you do this and all? But Sunithi knows fighting has no meaning. She knows that the only solution to all our problems of life is to go to Lord Narayana. And she also guides her son to that. And what success also, yeah, so let's also see, in spite of her motherly love being afflicted by such a difficult situation, Sunithi does not ask her son to retaliate. She does not criticize her stepmother. She does not go and fight on his behalf. She does not use this opportunity to get back to the father that, hey, your father is like this. She does not criticize the father before him. She does not go and fight with the father. Hey, you know, you treat me like this. Why are you treating my son? You know, your something's wrong with you. But on the other hand, she, you know, keeps all those things aside, but she fully empathizes with his feelings. Even if she is hurt and pained, she does not guide from that place. And so basically she's taking care of his body, mind and soul, which is basically these five sheaths. And she does her real duty as a parent and directs him towards Krishna and his devotional service. So what is the success of... So another side point here, but important point is, like, she does not use this opportunity to get back to the father. So it's very important because it's only from the mother that the child develops respect for the father. And if the children do not respect the father, then in future they're not able to respect any authority. So spiritually, they're not able to surrender to a spiritual master of Krishna because the mother is telling, hey, my authority is the father in the house. And the father is following our spiritual master. So that's how the baby understands this, you know, disciplic succession and the parampara. And he sees the mother trusting the father and the mother, you know, putting the father, you know, helping the child develop respect. Very important so that the child can develop respect for all authorities because without that, spiritual life is finished. Now, what is the benefit of guiding like that? So Dhruv Maharaj goes and meditates in the forest. Narad Muni comes to guide him. He follows Narad Muni's guidance. He meditates for 6 months because he wants a kingdom greater than his great-grandfather, grandfather. And but while he's meditating on Lord Shri Krishna, he gets purified of those desires, and he comes and the Lord blesses him with devotional service, and the Lord also grants him the Dhruv Tara, and then he rules for 36,000 years, and then when Dhruv Maharaj is, you know, at the end of his life, he's going back home, back to Godhead. The Vishnu Dutas come to take him. Then the first question he asks them is, "Where is my mother?" And then the Vishnu Dutas show him that, hey, your mother is already ahead on that Pavan Hans, you know, this particular vehicle that is going to take everyone back home to Vaikuntha. Your mother is already there ahead of you. She's already been escorted by the Vishnu Dutas. So because she took care of him so nicely with a spiritual focus, she made her son really successful, and she was also successful. So we have to have this, our motherhood theme must also have the same spiritual focus as Suniti. So we have to be grounded, you know, in understanding who we are, who Krishna is, and what is our relationship with him. That I am, you know, spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna is my Lord. Krishna is my master. My duty is to serve him. If we are grounded in that, then we can help our children be grounded in that. For us to be grounded in that, one important thing is we have to chant, hear, and read Srila Prabhupada's books extremely sincerely so that we can always remain in the spiritual conception of life, so that we can also guide our children from the spiritual conception of life, just like Suniti. And they are successful, and we are also successful. So Dhruv Maharaj achieved all material success also because the Lord was so pleased with his meditation that he gave him, you know, the Dhruv Tara, that pole star. And it was you know, so some this spiritual focus is very important to have. Sorry, I was a little distracted. I was looking at a message, and I hope the voice on the conference call is loud now. Yeah, so this our motherhood has to have the same spiritual focus as Suniti. It's very, very important, and we have to ground ourselves spiritually for that. So today we will look at a little bit of this aspect of taking care of the within the Annamaya Pranamaya Koshas. We will, instead of I won't focus so much on the physical care and nurturing of our children, but I'll focus more on the emotional care for our children. There are and regarding the physical care of children, there are a lot of books to read. There's a lot of resources available for that on offline, and I would also recommend that you all study you know, some of the traditional ways. You know, sit down with your great-grandmothers, sit down with your grandmothers, and try to understand the wisdom that they have, or you know, the wisdom that is there with the midwives in the villages. You know, they know a lot more about you know, having a safe pregnancy and a healthful pregnancy, and also about, you know, taking care of the children and the common ailments and protecting from disease than modern science has to offer. So I would point you all towards those kind of resources, and if you'll find something interesting, I'll be very happy to hear that from you and also put that on our website for other people to learn. So regarding this emotional care of our children, even the Lord prepares the mother to be properly equipped to respond in a very emotionally astute and alert way with the children. So there are some research studies that have been done about how a mother's body definitely goes changes, but how a mother's brain undergoes changes during pregnancy and also after pregnancy. And the more she cares for the child and, you know, personally, the more her brain develops in certain ways as a mother and develops more motherly qualities. So basically, there are some physical brain changes that happen, and then there are some hormonal things that happen in the brain which cause a mother to be more very well equipped to take care of the child. So one thing is, we've also covered this in the, I think the second session of this seminar series. And we have discussed about how, you know, a woman's brain and emotions and everything are wired. You know, how our brain and everything else is wired so that we can take care of our children nicely. So we talked about this amygdala, we talked about this CSF hormone, we talked about oxytocin and how those things are higher and more developed in women than in men. So now we will see how those things undergo changes when the woman has a baby or is about to have a baby. So this amygdala, which helps, now these references I have from some articles on how a mother's brain undergoes changes, and those articles have been basically there are interviews of maternal brain researchers or brain researchers and child specialists and child psychologists. So I'm just trying to present a small synopsis for you all. So amygdala is basically, it helps process the memory and drives emotional reactions like fear, anxiety and aggression. So activity in the amygdala, this particular part of the brain in a woman, it grows in weeks and months after giving birth. So it makes sure that the woman is hypersensitive to her baby's needs, because this is the region that is drives all these emotional reactions like fear, anxiety and things like that. So she's becomes very hypersensitive to the baby's needs. So anything happens with the child, you know, there'll be fear triggering in, so that then she immediately responds by taking care of the baby. And then she also becomes, there are other things that I have researched, I've not put it on the slides, but she becomes very hypersensitive to, you know, people whom she has not met before, even while she is pregnant. So in the first 3 months of her pregnancy, she becomes extremely hypersensitive to people she has not met before, especially men. She does not, you know, feel comfortable. And this is something that modern American medical science is saying. And then they also say that therefore a woman is not comfortable traveling in the first 3 months of her pregnancy. Of course, physically it's not advisable, but emotionally also she doesn't feel safe. And so while the amygdala activity grows, also cocktail of hormones, basically oxytocin, CSF, which find more receptors in a larger amygdala. So basically when amygdala expands, those hormones have a larger surface area to act with. and they help create a positive feedback loop to motivate mothering behavior. So this particular thing, we will see it in two slides later, how that positive feedback loop happens. And we'll see, and also how that positive feedback loop helps in the development of the child's brain also. And so just when the woman stares at her baby and responds to him, then also these reward centers in the brain are activated. So basically there are certain things, you know, we have certain habits and we do certain things because we feel we're getting some reward. So there are some reward centers in our brain. And, you know, when we're, you know, which help us feel rewarded when we are feeling some sense of achievement. So because of all these hormones and changes, those reward centers in the brain also become extremely active when a mother is looking at the baby. So the, you know, the woman feels rewarded in the brain, you know, some changes happen. So she feels happy. Like that. Several studies have said that. And then, you know, because of that, then the woman, you know, talks more to the child and then the baby responds, and then the woman, you know, feels more, you know, like happy inside. And, you know, there's more response and, you know, more understanding of the child, and the child is looking at the mother and understanding and things like that. So these are some of the things that happen that, that cause a mother to be naturally affectionate to the child. And also, and the more she responds with the child and talks with the child, the more it impacts her, you know, and the more it helps her grow as a nurturing parent. Just a minute. And like this oxytocin that we talked about in the second session. So basically these maternal oxytocin levels, basically which are responsible for maternal infant bonding across all mammalian species, they increase during pregnancy and postpartum, after pregnancy, after delivery. And the more the mother is involved in childcare, the greater the increase in oxytocin. So then it also increases, as I was discussing, as the women look more at their babies or hear their babies cries and coos or snuggle, or when they are snuggling with their babies, when they're holding their baby, their oxytocin levels increase like that. And then that further causes the mother to bond more. And also it has been said, modern medical studies have said that when a woman breastfeeds her child, her oxytocin is higher than women who are not breastfeeding. And it is found that because they are breastfeeding and they are snuggling with the child and interacting with the child, oxytocin levels are higher, and it causes those mothers to be more sensitive to the sounds of their baby's cries than other non-breastfeeding mothers. Like that. So this is how nature prepares a mother's brain and her body so that she can naturally care for the child and feel happy. And when a mother does that, then the child also feels certain things. So as we are seeing in this slide, early interactions for a reference point of love. So the next three slides I have from a book, I didn't put the reference here, but this book is called Difficult Mothers, and this book is available in the, you know, the King County Library system. It's also available online to purchase on Amazon. And while I'm talking about these positive things, that book is about how, you know, there are certain types of mothering practices that how it may have impacted us as children, and how if we have those practices, how it will impact our children in the future, and also how we have been mothered in certain ways which may not have been so good, then how it impacts our mothering practices in the future also. So these references are taken from there, and I'll just read it because it was very hard for me to paraphrase it. It was written so beautifully. So the early interactions between, you know, a mother looking at the baby and the baby looking at the mother, and then, you know, the baby looks at the mother, then the baby smiles, then the mother looks at the child and the mother coos or, you know, says something sweet, and then the baby gives a bigger smile. And then, you know, when the baby is really excited because of this, you know, this nice interaction going on, then the baby's, you know, starts expressing by moving the hands and the legs, you know, and like becoming really happy. And then the baby, you know, the face brightens up, and then the baby keeps looking at the mother, and the mother keeps looking at the baby. So this brings about changes in the baby's brain also, right? And what happens is, as we read here, these early interactions form a reference point for what each of us seeks in people we love, to be seen and understood. Children form many relationships with other relatives and with friends that impact on their lives. But the emotional signaling between infant and a mother forms a core sense of being a person with feelings who can communicate feelings to others. So basically the way the mother responds to the child makes the child like that becomes a reference point of love for them in their future relationships with others. And here it's say, like as we read this further, we will understand. A key experience of having a difficult mother, whether we are 3 months old or 30 years old, is of the negative of that positive eye-to-eye engagement. So basically, as we read here, with a difficult mother, our efforts to shape our mother's view are constantly frustrated. We feel ignored, erased, and highlighted. We doubt who we are and what we feel. Perhaps our signals are interpreted as bad or mean or selfish. We then inhabit a world of shame in which being known entails criticism and derision. So within this book, there is an example of a mother who had a child, but she was extremely depressed and disturbed. So even if she was breastfeeding the baby, there was no interaction. She would just do it in a very mechanical way. So much so that after a few weeks, the baby stopped taking milk from the mother. And then the baby would always look very tensed. Like a baby was a few weeks old, would look extremely tense. The body used to be extremely tight. And the baby would make no eye contact with anyone. And then this family went to some, therapist and things like that, and, spoke with some family elders. And then they understood that it was because the mother was not responding to the child, the baby was feeling unloved. Baby as young as 3 weeks old and few weeks old. And then the mother realized she had to overcome all her emotional issues so that her baby could grow properly. See, even the physical things of the baby were affected because the mother was not present for the child. And, so this positive eye-to-eye engagement was not happening, Baby looking, mother responding, baby smiling, mother getting excited, baby getting excited. So these, and then the mother holding the child, snuggling to the child, just like it causes changes in the mother's brain, it causes changes in the baby's brain also. So then this lady, she had to overcome some of her, with some kind of therapy and some training and some, advice from the elders. She overcame some of those behaviors and she started making eye contact and talking to the child. And then after a few weeks, she noticed that the baby started trusting her again. And then the baby started, the body started relaxing and then the baby was smiling and then the baby was accepting her milk and, things like that. So this is what we're talking that, see, the only person the baby feels very comfortable with is the mother. And in that case, that relationship didn't develop. So that baby actually, the Anamaya Kosh gets disturbed because the person from whom you're getting the food itself is not available for you. So then, children as young as 3 weeks old and 4 weeks old and, just born also undergo a lot of emotional trauma. We don't understand, they can't express, but they go there and those scars, once they are formed, even those scars cause changes in the brain. They can cause lesions in the amygdala of the baby. And then those remain for life, right? The way their bodies respond to, or the hormones respond also, those circuits form and then they remain like that for life. So this is extremely important, this relationship of the child with the mother is extremely, extremely important. And then children work hard to make sense of their interpersonal experiences. Who is reliable and who offers me warmth and comfort and feeding? And whose touch and smell are associated with these? Are questions intrinsically related to their survival. As a rudimentary sense of self, another person becomes more sophisticated, so do questions about their meanings. What does that behavior indicate about me? So when the mother is not looking at the child, the baby is feeling maybe something is wrong with me, right? And the baby as young as we saw 3 weeks old, but even little children, if they don't get that eye contact, they don't get that love, they don't get that physical nurturing, they start getting these kind of psychological imprints in their brain. That, oh, maybe something is wrong with me. Or does the person I'm trying to communicate with understand me? Hey, I have so many feelings. I'm trying to say something, but my mother is not responding to me in a certain way. Do my feelings resonate with others? Am I really communicating? And once those things develop in their brain, that is the complex they live with all their life in all their relationships. So as we see, we continue to be particularly vulnerable to our mother's responses, even as we develop very different bonds with other people who see and discover us in different ways. For most parents and their children, the experience of belonging to each other has its ups and downs. But whatever the trip ups and scrapes along the way, the relationship is largely comforting, supportive, and expansive. So here we are not talking about that the motherhood has to be perfect and mother cannot lose her temper and mother cannot this thing. No, you know, you are all human beings and those things will happen. We are talking about something that this author talks about is good enough motherhood. You know, you may get angry, you may get irritated and all, but then how do you get back? How do you respond again to your child? Are you still a loving person to the child? Does the child feel confident that you're a loving person? Like that, or has a child, because of repeated experiences of that difficult behavior, you know, has lost that confidence? So we're not talking you have to be a perfect mother. You all have scope for getting angry and upset. But you know, how do you handle yourself after that? How do you handle the relationship after that? That's what we're talking about. And the reason we're again stressing on this is that how, when the Anamaya Kosha and the Pranamaya Kosha is challenged for the baby as small as 3 weeks, and they cannot think of higher spiritual things. They cannot. One thing is they don't know how to develop relationships in the future because they feel something's wrong with them, and it's very difficult for them to, because that is disturbed. It's very difficult for them to develop a higher spiritual conception of life. So again, then there is further talk about what does it feel like to suffer more pain in a relationship than comfort and pleasure. So, you know, if it has been a difficult mother, like one who cannot bounce back, who's, you know, like who is really difficult, then it becomes, you know, people, the children tend to distrust themselves, discount their own wishes, constantly police their thoughts or actions to gain comfort from the person whom they depend upon. And when this dilemma shapes a son's or daughter's experience of a mother, the author says, I use the shorthand of a difficult mother to refer a relationship that has many parts and many contexts and perspectives. So that becomes a difficult relationship, and that's how it impacts the children. So having understood, the reason was not to scare anybody, but the reason was just to show how important that bonding with the mother is. And the father cannot be the mother of the child. The mother is the mother. And mother, because of going through the pregnancy and, you know, because of taking care of the child, becomes a natural caregiver of the child also. And that bond cannot be formed by another living entity. But what is happening now is, you know, as we see around us, there's a lot of emotional homelessness going around. Even for us as adults also, and for children also. So basically, there's a lot of material advancement. There are a lot of gadgets. There are big houses, big rooms. Each one has a room. Each one has a TV. Each one has their own tablet, cell phone, things like that. So those kind of interactions have reduced, and it's not just babies need it, even children, adults need it. And many times the children are sent to daycare because there were past studies that said that, oh, children don't understand anything. They don't understand who the mother is and who do, you know, it's okay. Anyone, somebody has to take care of them because it's all about feeding and cleaning their poop, you know. But, you know, there are these studies that say that, you know, this relationship is very important. So a lot of time we are working for our sense of worth, or we're working for, you know, sustaining ourselves, or we're, I know a lot of people who work for the college education fees, you know, so that till the child is 18, like for the first 18 years of your life, you know, so what are you valuing? Are you valuing the development of the personality and the proper development of the Annamaya and Pranamaya Koshas, or are you so that the Manomaya, Vijnanamaya and Anandamaya Koshas can develop properly? Or are you valuing that they just remain in Anamaya and Pranamaya all their life? Because we are telling the child, hey, I value your college education more than I value you. Or, you know, we are working so that we can help in the development of, you know, their personalities through so many classes and things like that. So something to consider, yes, all those things are important. But, you know, while we are doing that, are we missing the point here? That this emotional care and this emotional presence, constant presence, is also very, very important. Now, how we all do it in our motherhood is up to us. But something for us to think about, are we only caring for their body and its paraphernalia, like their job and their education and their standing in society and, you know, eating, sleeping, mating and defending? Or are we caring for something higher? Something for us. And if there is, you know, if the connection does not develop for the children, then they live with feelings of bottomless loneliness and anxiety all their lives. So the fear things and the, you know, the insecurities that develop with them as children, they carry those patterns in every situation of their life, even as they grow up as adults. So there are big homes, there are very fancy homes and all, but then there is lack of connection in the families. So something for all of us to think, you know, what are we after? You know, if we're caring just for the body and the paraphernalia, it's not going to help us make our children truly successful, according to Krishna's point of view. So something to think about. So Arjuna expresses this extremely important concern, like in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And he says that, I don't want to fight this war, Krishna. And he gives many reasons why he doesn't want to fight. So one of the reasons he gives is in text 40 and 41. When irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted, and from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. So Arjuna is basically saying, I don't want to go to this war, because if I go to this war, many men will be killed. So many women will be rendered without any ban, without any protection. And when that happens, they will be open to exploitation. And when they are openly exploited, as if you read the news now, in, you know, because of what the ISIS is doing and what has happened in the wars of Afghanistan and Iraq, many women have been forced to become prostitutes, and they are not able to care for their children. And the whole atmosphere is so disturbed that those children are not able to develop properly. Then the children grow up with such so much anger, you know, that they grow up to become terrorists also. So if you see in the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, there was a documentary on CNN which talked about how, because of those wars, those women are suffering and they are being abused and exploited. Anyone comes and rapes them at any time, and they are left to fend alone for their children. So because those women are not able to be in a protected, peaceful environment, they're not able to properly raise the children. So then there is unwanted progeny, or the next generation gets difficult. Unwanted progeny means children who are born out of, you know, all these kind of activities. And, you know, then they're not children with, you know, they're not, like, you know, their consciousness of the children not very good, because the man's consciousness is not good at the time of conception. So then you have unwanted progeny, which is not cultured, or existing progeny is also not being able to be protected. That is happening. And if you see a lot of these ISIS recruits, you know, why people are joining ISIS in the Middle East. If you read stories online of, you know, like a lot of BBC, CNN documentaries, New York Times has documentaries on some people who joined ISIS and how they came back, or some people joined ISIS and how they are still there. So there are stories of girls who joined that. And there are many girls who said they were looking for real love. They were looking to belong somewhere, because they didn't feel like they belong to the family. So those families are happy families in the material sense, you know, a good house, you know, gadgets and everything, and, you know, good money. But those people didn't feel there was this emotional homelessness. And those girls actually joined that, and they followed all the customs that they were asked to follow. They lived in the women's harem, and they lived, you know, they got married, and, you know, with, you know, man who had many wives, but they just liked this feeling of being in a home and, you know, having other family members and having a common purpose and goal. So what happens is, when children are not cared for properly, they turn to wrong things to attract attention or to find love. Basically, everyone has a need for love. It is, you know, what is right or wrong is the strategies people use to satisfy the need for love. So this can happen. And also, if you just go on, you know, and you look at all the different shootings, school shootings and mall shootings and, you know, shootings that have happened over here, and, you know, they're talking for gun control laws and all. If you just go and look at the profile of each and every shooter, it's mostly come from a broken home. Mostly come from a broken home, feeling unloved, and mostly there are children who come out with guns, right? Or they have not received attention, or they have a lot of mental health issues. Like, one of the examples is the Sandy Hook Elementary, Adam Lanza. His mother was mentally disturbed. She was divorced. And her mother used to take, she had a lot of guns in the house, and she used to keep them in the open. And the mother used to take her sons to the shooting range to practice how to shoot. And this boy used to go with the mother everywhere, but the first person he shot with the gun was his own mother. And then he went around shooting everybody. So you can sense how much that child would have, growing up as a child, that child would have felt neglected by the parents, or felt this emotional homelessness that we are talking about. So we have to give this proper emotional care to our children, be there for them, empathize with them. And first we have to sort ourselves out emotionally also. You know, we have to mature ourselves also. So best is to take to the spiritual path and progress like that, so that we are sorted emotionally, so that we can give proper emotional care to our children also, so that they can focus on their spiritual lives properly. Otherwise, if we don't give them enough love, time and attention, and we tell them to follow a spiritual path, or we tell them to get good grades in academics, you know, they'll think that you value some tangible success more than you value them. So this mother's role in shaping the child is extremely important, because that's the relationship the child has, a you know, more amount of time also the child spends with the mother is more than the child spends with the father. And then the mother cooks the food and then, you know, feeds the child. That develops another relationship, another rasa, another affection. The child feels, and the child feels happy, and that develops a relationship like that. And also cooking properly, we'll get to that, but cooking properly in the house, when the senses of the child are satisfied and other family members are also satisfied, like you're cooking proper meals and you're offering to Krishna, and we're all accepting the remnants as prasad, then that keeps the senses satisfied. And when the senses are satisfied, and that, you know, that relationships are developed nicely, then the children don't feel the need to go outside. They're very able to focus on the spiritual life. So we're a little over time. This is a larger topic. So next week we will discuss a lot of examples of this, you know, provision of emotional care, empathy, praying for the child, that we can learn from Yashoda Mai's motherhood. We'll have three examples from that. We'll have examples from Narad Muni's mother, how she was a helpless woman, but she gave the right atmosphere to her child. Kuntide's motherhood, Gandhari's motherhood, Draupadi's motherhood, and how a mother's consciousness impacts the child's consciousness. So we will take it from there. Are there any questions you would like to ask, or you would like me to cover some points in the future, or any corrections or comments or any things to share? People on conference call can share, and people on YouTube can type it down. Hare Krishna. I'll just wait a little bit for people. Anyone on the conference call? You'd like to share anything? So, just to summarize, today we covered the importance of a mother's role is to take the spirit soul back home, back to Godhead. And how by her constant care of the nourishing of the whole person, the physical, emotional and spiritual, a mother can really impact the child's consciousness. And how the emotion, how our focus has to be spiritual, and that's how we take care of the emotional and physical parts also. And also how when we are taking care of the child, this focusing on the a genuine loving relationship with the child is extremely important, where the child feels loved. And you know, where the child feels extremely loved and nurtured, then that child can grow. So that is the protection we can give to the child. The protection is not just about having some economics of, you know, their college education, or their, you know, having a house for them, or, you know, having a lot of wealth for them in place. That is not the only protection we need to offer. That is just taking care of the body, you know, something at the Annamaya level. But we have to think about the Pranamaya level, Manomaya level, Gyanamaya level. So the physical is taken care of with a spiritual focus, and this emotional relationship has to be developed. And once that is developed, we have to get back to our you know, spiritual focus again, so that we can nurture them. I'm sorry, the display driver, something went wrong here, and I guess it's not streaming live. But thank you very much. Unless there are other questions, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol. Thank you.